Sounds True presents How to Meditate, Session 2, with Pema Chodron.
So I'd like to begin this morning with just a short review of what we did last week. I began by talking about suffering and the reason that we were working with the practice. I gave this particular reason, which was to remove suffering. This is a particularly appealing reason to most people. And said the practice of meditation and the Dharma altogether remove not only suffering, but the root of suffering or the cause of suffering. So this is to say, not just the outer manifestations of suffering. In fact, it does not remove what we normally call pain, but it does remove suffering. So this is to say, at the outer level of things like stress and reactivity, Dharma works very much with beginning for reactivity to settle down and begin to dissolve more and more and more, emotional reactivity. And the sense of tension and stress that's associated with so many people's lives, this also is directly addressed by meditation and by the Dharma. These are considered to be like what you could call fringe benefits or something like this. The real profundity is that meditation and the Dharma addresses the very root of suffering. So there's many ways to teach the root of suffering, but I gave the definition of ignorance, because that's very easy to understand, that with meditation we are addressing the quality of not knowing. So this is just at the most basic everyday life, of not being aware, of not understanding what it is that we're doing, of having very little consciousness of what it is we're doing, from the smallest details such as not aware that we're drinking a glass of water or spacing out when we brush our teeth, this kind of lack of awareness or ignorance. But also ignorance, the more profound level of ignorance, of not understanding that what we're doing is creating our own suffering. That not understanding that the way that we work with our minds, the way that we continually strengthen strong emotional reactivity and discursive thought, and that this leads to suffering. So meditation definitely works very, very directly with beginning to see what we're doing and beginning to be able to realize that we have a choice in any moment to either escalate our suffering or begin to have it diminish, which is to say, in any given moment, whether on the meditation cushion or in post-meditation, when we begin to perceive more and more clearly, because of our meditation practice, that we are hooked, or that we're beginning on a line of discursive thought which is disastrous in terms of strengthening habitual patterns of suffering, we begin to see this more and more clearly, and we begin to realize that we do not have to strengthen these habitual patterns, that we could do something different. So an example of this that comes from Sweet Yeshe, was she was talking about looking in the mirror, noticing that she had some gray hairs, and just from that observation, starting on a downward cycle of self-denigration and a very familiar cycle to her, she was saying, of feeling very bad, feeling very low, feeling very lonely and unloved. And just this whole thing started from seeing a gray hair. But because of studying the Uttara Tantra and because of her meditation, she saw what she was doing and she didn't go on the downward cycle. And of course, the more that we see that kind of thing and don't go on the downward cycle, the more our confidence grows in our capacity to awaken, and the more our confidence grows in the workability of our situation, that we are not victims of our habitual patterns. It can definitely feel like we are victims of our habitual patterns, like they get the better of us. But the Dharma addresses this very, very directly and begins to unwind this whole sense of being imprisoned by our own mind. So last week I talked about that what we work with in meditation and what we're always studying in the Dharma is our own mind. And this is the source of all suffering and also the source of all happiness. And I asked you to think about that and contemplate that for the rest of your life, that when something comes up in your life that causes you dissatisfaction, that triggers habitual pattern, that triggers reactivity, that makes you angry, lonely, jealous, any number of emotions, including pleasant emotions, question, is this happening because of outer circumstances? Is it completely dependent on outer circumstances? The Dharma says that we have to work with our mind. And if we work with our mind, the outer circumstances become workable. And that things that used to irritate us, bother us, trigger our reactivity and habitual patterns, no longer trigger our reactivity and habitual patterns. So when you find yourself caught in a Shenpa attack, you have to ask yourself, how much of this is really what's happening on the outside, and how much of this is my mind? And you have to say to yourself, is from now until next year, on this very day, if a year from now, if every day for 1 year I worked on this and just asked myself, is this my mind or is this the outer circumstances? And continued to work with my mind. At the end of a year, not to mention 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, would I find myself in a world that seemed to have less of these irritations, less of these grievances? Would it be that the outer circumstances seem to transform by how I work with my mind? So I really challenge you to ask those kind of questions every moment, every second of your day, and every day of your week, and every week of your month, and every month of your year. I really urge you to work on this. And you can do it in the manner that the Buddha requested, which is that we scrutinize the teachings. But that's different than closing our minds to them and saying, this is ridiculous. This is clearly Tim's fault. Or if those people in the office could just get it together, then we wouldn't be having these. I wouldn't be having this problem. And so this is challenging. So I really urge you to work with this. And really the guideline is, if you're hooked, then you need to work on your side of it, no matter how outrageous and unjust the outer circumstances might seem. If you're hooked, that's a clue that you have some work to do. So what I'd like to do now is have us sit here and go through the meditation as it was described last week, and that I hope you've been working on during this week. Oh, and I wanted to say one other thing, just in terms of review. The post-meditation instruction for this week was the same as the meditation instruction for this week, which was to work on stabilizing the mind, to work on always coming back and being present. And I hope that you worked with this. Obviously, I can give these assignments, but only to the degree that you work on them are they going to have any transformative effect on you. And for some of you, probably right now, you're just saying, oh, yes, she did say that last week, and you haven't thought about it since. But hopefully you've actually been working with it. And this class will be much more transformative and productive, if only to the degree, really, that you work with these throughout a whole week's period. So the instruction was to bring out the quality of mind, the stabilized quality of mind, the ability of mind to stay in one place, to stay present. And this is the basis of all the transformation that Dharma produces in us, is that our mind can stay. It can stay present. And the quality of our mind is clear, is awake, is alert and knowing, and is free from fixation. And that by training in being present, that's the same thing as coming to know the nature of our mind, coming to know that alert quality. So the more you train in being present, being right here, really the more you begin to feel like your mind is sharpening up and is clearer and more refreshed. So last week's emphasis was on coming back with the idea that the intention was being right here, being awake. And the method for doing that was placing our mind on an object. So the intention was to stay present and to stabilize the mind. And the method for doing that was placing our mind on an object. And the object that we're working with is the breath. So at this point, I'd like us to have a short sitting where we do what we did last week exactly, which is to say, I'll wait a moment and then I'll hit the gong. And first to settle and just be here. Now we've come in, but you didn't really have a chance to settle so much because right away I started to talk, and that takes your attention to my voice. But now is the time to sort of settle and see what you brought in with you this morning in terms of your body, how it's feeling, your state of mind, your mood, anything. You don't really even have to label this, but just have a sense of being here. And then begin by going through your posture and then feeling the breath as it goes in and as it goes out, or just out if that's what you prefer. This is what we're going to do. Come in and settle, run through your posture, and then begin knowing that you're beginning. Have a clarity that now I'm starting and my intention is to keep coming back to the breath. And what I'm doing here is training and staying completely present. And I'm also training and stabilizing my mind. So you're kind of clear about what you're doing. So let's do this at this point.